We're going to start the book of Genesis, Genesis chapter 18. I do want to make an announcement, though. Tonight, Brother Lou DeFilip Antonio will be at Anchor Baptist Church in Wellsville. So if you have a chance, get over there. Get on over and support them while he's there. He's exulting. He's been at Dennis Corll's shooting seminar. In other words, Dennis Corll invites preachers from all over the nation in, and they have a glorified time with handguns for 1 week. Preaching and handguns. So he's glorified. I saw him come up with a big, huge trophy. He sent a picture of it or whatever. So he's in hog heaven at the moment. But he'll be over there preaching at Anchor tonight. All right. So Genesis chapter 18. The context here is it talks about Abraham has been sitting in his tent door in the heat of the day. And, you know, around here, if it gets to 85 degrees, you know, the people begin to melt. If you're from Allegheny County or whatever else, that's about as hot as God ever wanted on this earth. But if you've ever been in places where it gets hot, and I've lived in some of those places, you know, what to do with the heat of the day. When I lived in Greece, for example, everybody just went home and slept. When it came to 2 o'clock in the afternoon, every store was closed. You couldn't shop. You couldn't do anything. American kids were always getting in trouble because they're playing basketball in the street at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and that they just couldn't imagine anything more rude than that. Everybody went home and slept for 2 hours, and then somewhere around 10 o'clock at night, the restaurants would start getting people in, getting ready to eat. And that's how they handled the heat of the time. So we get a picture here of what did Abraham do in that heat, that hard heat of the desert out there. He'd sit in his tent door. And it says here in verse 2, and he lift up his eyes and looked, and lo, three men stood by him. And when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door and bowed himself toward the ground. And he said, my Lord. Now, look at that word Lord there. Capital L, then it's a small O, a small R, and a small D. Now look at verse 1. And the Lord, you look there, it's a capital L, a capital O, a capital R, and a capital D. Two different uses of the word Lord in your Bible. Why is that? Well, brief thing here. There are two words in the Hebrew language that are commonly translated Lord. There's a few others also, but one of them is the word Jehovah. If you were a Jehovah Witness, you would think it's wrong to translate the word Lord. You'd always just say Jehovah, Jehovah, Jehovah. Well, Jehovah is a title as much as it is a name, and I could prove that even in Jehovah Witness Bible. We won't go into that right now, but the thing is, when the King James translator saw the word Jehovah, they would write Lord with all capitals. Capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D. Therefore, you as an English reading person could realize this is what member of the Trinity we're working with. Okay? Now, if you're a Christian, you believe that Jesus is the Lord. That's who Jesus is. The Lord. And when he comes, it's the Lord Jehovah that's living as a man on the earth. But then there's another word called Adonai used in the Greek, in the Hebrew. And again, your King James translators therefore translated that capital L, small o, small r, small d. So you'll see both of those in the King James Bible. It's one of those superiorities again of the King James Bible where it counts on you not being lazy. It counts on you thinking a little bit while you read your Bible. And it would tell you that and show you what name of God is behind that. Now, the thing is, when Abraham says here in verse 3, he says, my Lord, if I have now found favor in thy sight. He's not necessarily calling God here, but he's acknowledging him as someone greater than him. My Lord, okay? We use that term today in a landlord. It's a place, the only place you really have a lord in the English, in America, is you have a landlord. And what do we call that? Somebody who owns your land, he has rights to it that you don't have. You can sublet those rights, you can rent those rights from him, but ultimately in law, the right of possession is his, and he has certain rights he retains because of it. All right, it's meant to show a superiority and that you're granting that superiority in your attitude. Does that mean your landlord is smarter than you? No, it doesn't mean that, does it? Does it mean he's a more honest, virtuous person? Doesn't mean that at all. All it means is that when you call him your landlord, you're acknowledging certain rights that he has. And you're acknowledging that and saying that, okay? So the thing is, when we call somebody our Lord, not capitals, but we call them that, it is a way of respect. They do that in the House of Lords in England. If you go to a court in England, you actually call the judge your worship. Why? Because worship is to acknowledge anyone as having that kind of authority or ascendancy over you. In America, we wouldn't like that. We think of worship only for God, all right? Until sports figures come along, all right? All right, so the thing is, it says in verse 3, my Lord, if I have now found favor in thy sight, pass not away, I pray thee, from thy servant. Let a little water, I pray you, be fetched. I love that word. And wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. And I will fetch a morsel of bread and comfort ye your hearts. After that ye shall pass on. For therefore are you come to your servant. And they said, so do as thou hast said. And again, one of the things is, and for example, a bishop or a deacon is someone who has to be a lover of hospitality. When Abraham saw these men come, obviously by their dress, by what they look, we know them to be angels. We know the Lord Jesus Christ himself to be one of them. We're not sure how much of that Abraham understood, but he understood they're men superior to him. He treated them as such, gave them that acknowledgement. And one of the things he did is he fed and took care of them, gave them water and such. And that's why it's one of the kindest things you can do for guests is to bring them in, treat them as long lost people or whatever, and treat them as such. All right. So it goes on and it says verse 6, and Abraham hastened unto the tent unto Sarah and said, make ready quickly 3 measures of fine meal, knead it and make cakes upon the hearth. And Abraham ran unto the herd and fetched a calf tender and good, and gave it unto a young man, and he hasted to dress it. And he took butter and milk and the calf which he had dressed and set them before them. And he stood by them under the tree, and they did eat. Now it's interesting. You know, you can imagine sitting there and boy, they bring it, sit you down and the first run out and get a calf and slaughter it and cook that thing while you're waiting. So, you know, there's probably a little bit of waiting here. I think by the time someone killed a calf and dressed it and cooked that thing, probably wasn't 5 minutes, all right? They didn't have microwaves in those days. And, you know, and then they took the milk and the butter. Now, I'll tell you something this, out of Hebrew law, you can be sure of one thing, that milk and that butter wasn't from that calf's mother. You realize the law of God forbid that? Thou shalt not see the kid in his mother's milk. There was something in God's mind and heart uncomely about taking a mother's milk and cooking her own children in it, okay? Gives you an idea of the character of God. You see some things about him when you read that. Just some things about him, what he's like, what his heart is like. But and then it goes on, it says in verse 9, and they said unto him, where is Sarah thy wife? And he said, behold, in the tent. And he said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life. And lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son. And Sarah heard it in the tent door that was behind him. Now, why do they say the time of life? Well, you ladies who, and some of you practice a form of birth control, it's a natural one where you keep track of your body and such. You know at what times you're fertile, what times you're not fertile. And we now know that if a woman keeps track of it accurately, it becomes more accurate than the pill itself, okay? Every child we had, we chose when it was to be born. I think we had 2 that we threw caution to the winds, but other than that, we chose when we wanted her to be pregnant. And we knew exactly when by with her body, very careful charts and such. So the time of life, God said, that's going to come for Sarah. She's an older woman now and such, but we're going to make that happen. All right. Now, what is Sarah's reaction to that? Verse 12. Sarah laughed out loud? No, within herself. Okay, we're seeing something going on in her heart. Now, God can read the heart of every person on this earth. Okay? So, God is the only one who can quote what a person's heart said. We're going to get a look into Sarah's heart here for a moment. Verse 12, Sarah laughed within herself, saying, "After I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure? My Lord being old also?" In other words, hey, Bubbos, wake up. Abraham's 90-some years old, all right? He's an old man. I'm old. It's past the time of life. This isn't happening with me anymore. Well, one of the things is, keep this in mind, is God, if you read the book of Job and you understand it, God made old people young in those days. He said their skin would come unto them like a babe. The book of Job explains that to you. That's why people lived those long lives in those days. When a person repented in Job's days and Abraham's days, God revived them and made their flesh young again on their body. How much so? Do you realize in another chapter, men were going to be lusting for Sarah? Lusting for? Now, you ladies, let me tell you something. We have some ladies who've aged gracefully in this church, and God bless you for that, okay? But I doubt young men lust for you, and I'm not trying to be mean. I'm not trying to be evil when I say that. I'm not trying to make a joke. I'm just saying that's a fact of life. You remember a time when young men looked twice, all right? And such. You know, one of the things I've pointed out to my boys and I've pointed out to men from this church, when it comes to Christian dress on young ladies, Christian dress, I have watched girls from good churches, and I've watched two different things. I've seen some where they do everything they can to be alluring, but they fit the rules. In other words, I'm wearing a dress, you know, it's down to here, but it's alluring. I have watched others. Brother McVeigh tends to bring some people from Pastor Black's church. When I met Pastor Black, I shook his hand and said, if I could ever have young people in my church like you do, I would call myself a pastor. Okay? And I point out to my boys, they're very pretty girls who dress to look plain. Most plain girls dress to look pretty. These are very pretty girls who dress to look plain. And oh, the young man who gets such a woman. What a glory to him. All right? I always told my wife I wanted to have a girl that when I stuck her head in a pail of water and brought it up, she was just as pretty when I was done. All right? And, all right? They came about 15 years of marriage. She says, can we quit this? I said, it's real. All right? All right. But again, the point is here with Sarah. She's grown old, but I want you to understand what we saw comments going on in her heart of hearts. No one heard it but the Lord. But look at verse 12 again. Then Sarah laughed within herself, saying, after I'm waxed old, shall I have pleasure? And then she says, my Lord being old also. Who is she talking about there? My Lord being old also. She's talking about Abraham, her husband. Doesn't Peter quote that? Abraham, or Sarah, who called her husband Lord. This is the only place she does it. You know where she did it? In her heart. In her heart. I want to talk about marriage this morning. And I've gone all the way around Robinson's barn to get there. But I want to talk about marriage this morning because as I pray for the folks in this church and as I go up and down and I watch the young people, the old people and such, I have noted that there are two things going on in the Black Creek Baptist Church that both carry the title marriage, but they are not the same thing. For example, in our refrigerator, one of my sons, I'm not going to say which one because people in this county would stone him. He doesn't like maple syrup. Okay? So we'll keep Sam protected right now. All right? But the thing is, but you can go and there's this jar or whatever and you can pull it out and you think that's maple syrup. That's been the maple syrup. But it's not maple syrup. Okay? And if you put real maple syrup next to it, it doesn't taste the same. Sam knows that. He doesn't like the taste of maple syrup. He knows those aren't the same. But if you were sitting at the table and say, pass the maple syrup, and that was sitting there, you'd pass that. Now, You know, a good Vermont or New York farmer, Pennsylvania farmer, they'd be disgusted. You called that maple syrup? All right. And thought, because, you know why? Because they grew up with the real thing. And they know the difference. I remember when I was a kid, and we all talk about these things when I was a kid and such, and, you know, I had to walk 18 miles to school, carry my sister on my back and such. You know, we came home, lived in a shoebox, and your friend would say, you had a shoebox? We weren't that lucky, you know. And such, we all talk about that kind of stuff, but the thing is, my mother canned all our tomatoes. We grew the tomatoes. One of my jobs as a kid used to be that when we were putting the tomatoes out, sometimes to ripen, because frosts were coming, and so she'd put them out to ripen in the sun. I used to have to stand and guard to keep the little kids from eating the tomatoes. I used to hate that job, because they'd get real sneaky, run around the house and try to get them and such, and then, you know, they'd have horrible diarrhea, because they'd been eating green tomatoes all day, and my mother would realize I didn't do it right. And, but it used to be one of my jobs was to do that. But my mother would make homemade spaghetti sauce, and it took 2 days to make it. She could not make that sauce in one day. And you'd walk home, I mean, you'd come home and realize she is making spaghetti sauce. And oh my goodness, you know, you weren't even gonna eat it that day. You weren't even gonna eat that till the next day. And you know, and after I'd gone in the military and such and traveled around, I came home one time, my mother said, what meal would you like me to make? Oh my goodness, Mom, make spaghetti. And she did. It was ready that day. And it didn't taste the same. I said, Mom, this doesn't taste the same. Oh, yeah, I just use something out of a jar now. Okay? Now, can you blame a woman that's raised 5 kids on an absolute penury? We had no money in those days. All right? Can you blame her that, you know, as she's gotten a little older and such, that she's pouring spaghetti sauce out? No, I didn't blame her at all. But you know what I also realized? It's that Paul McCartney song runs through your head. Once there was a way to get back homeward. Once there was a way to get back home. All right? I don't care if old Paul McCartney was, you know, a hellbound beetle or whatever else. He touched the heart of anybody that's ever gone home again and wondered why it's not the same and such. He touched the heart with that. It was a good thing that he touched that and realized, I'll never eat that kind of spaghetti sauce again. It's never going to happen again. It's gone. It's over. And they're both called spaghetti. We have two things in this church called marriage, and they are not the same. Now, let me say this right off the bat. In marriage, in a woman's heart, her husband is her Lord. In marriage, Bible marriage, in her heart, her husband is her Lord. It is a heart attitude. Now, there's another thing called marriage in the United States that has swept the nation. It has swept the churches. It has completely transformed the homes. And it's the idea that two people come together and they begin to have connubial rights one with another. Right? I think everybody understood that. If you're a certain age, you got what I said. If you're another certain age, whoop, it's where we wanted it. All right? So the thing is, they have communal rights one towards another, and they exercise those, and after a while, they do what happens physically. They become physically addicted one to another, because you were made that way. Do you realize there's certain animals, robins, that once they mate, they become physically addicted one to another. They'll stay together forever. Dogs don't have that in their brain. That process isn't there. That's why the Jews call Gentiles dogs. The men will sleep with anything. The women will sleep around, that kind of thing. They call them dogs. Certain animals have that. Certain animals don't have it. Humans are those who have that, who they mate with. Dopamine is released in their body. I just read a thing here recently that a woman can find, they can find pieces of DNA in a woman's body for her life from every man she's ever slept with. They become one flesh. And so the thing is, what goes on inside of that woman and the man, there's physiological changes that carry on in the brain where they become addicted one to another. Now, if you were an evolutionist, you'd see that as a glorified thing. in human evolution. The idea of why? Because the woman now trusts the man trusts the woman. They have this one or another. But if you're a creationist, you understand exactly what God said when he said the two should become one flesh. They become physically addicted. That the sight of his eyes, the smell of the lust behind his ears, the sound of his voice, all those things become embedded into her as much as her own self. They become physically addicted one to another. There's other things that happens in the man that goes on in those addictions. They can measure that now with MRIs and such. And they can go into that. These are things, I didn't read this out of a Bible. I read this from gynecologists, okay? Gynecologists who wrote this, who never mentioned God at all. They're talking about now how finally we can measure what goes on in the human body and what happens. So the thing is, this goes on, and so now the people are physically addicted one to another, but they have never gone through the process to find out, are we compatible for lifetime? Now, there was a time in my own mind when I was a pretty dashing young man. All right, now don't pop that bubble. Right, but in my own mind, I was actually quite a catch. All right,
yeah,
and yeah, that's you, Randy. You know, pop. All right? Don't pop them up, Randy. Pop. All right,
too late.
Yeah, but the thing is, in those days, a girl and a guy can get together, and it's all wonderful. It's all great. Physiologically, there is such a thing as falling in love. It lasts about 18 months, physiologically. And when that happens, the smell of her sweat don't smell bad, okay? Little rude things he does don't seem that rude, okay? And they can handle each other's faults and such. And then after 18 months, and I don't care what person you've studied behind, after about 18 months, that's gone. Suddenly, her sweat stinks like anybody else's. All right? Suddenly, the little rude things he does are rude little things. All that luster is gone. The shine is gone. You're still physically addicted to each other, but that aura of being in love is gone. And so, you wonder what to do. And so, we have a thing in this country that artificial syrup called marriage, which is a civil right in this country. Now keep this in mind. Let me teach you the difference between what's called a natural right and a civil right. A natural right, Thomas Jefferson talked about it, is something that God gave you. If you think you get your rights from the Constitution, you don't understand. You never got your right to bear arms from the Constitution. You got that from God, and the Constitution recognized it. Your right to freedom of speech didn't come from the Constitution. It came from God. They're called natural rights, and the Constitution recognized it. A civil right is a right that comes from a legislative body voting to give you that right. And if they voted to give it to you, they can vote to take it away. So it's called a civil right. Marriage has always been a God-given right in this country. God-given. That's why, for example, let's say that two Indians were to come here from the Amazon River Basin and they've never met in civilization before, and for some reason they're being threatened, you know, and they're brought here. Do we need to see a marriage license to know they're married? Do we need to have a stamp from the Brazilian government that they're married? No, we understand the God-given right for that man and woman to be called man. Whatever their culture called it, whatever they did to call it marriage, this is what it's supposed to be, and we know that's marriage. Most governments, though, can't abide with that, and so they created a second form of marriage in which you come and you have a civil marriage. You come together, and now civilly, you have certain rights one towards another. It used to be that the common law of this country governed. We have a phrase we call a common law marriage. We're like, oh, that's a bad marriage. Common law marriage didn't start out that way. Common law marriage started out as a very holy thing. When two people in England could not get to a Church of England, or they might be Baptists who wouldn't allow the Church of England to marry them, they couldn't have an official marriage license. They just went ahead and called themselves married anyway, and the English laws recognized that marriage to be as holy as any other marriage on this earth. It's a common law marriage, okay? It's as holy as any other marriage. So the thing is, one of the things social workers will still do in Allegheny County is if a man dies and there's a woman there that's been left and they've lived together for years, they'll go back and try to see, can they establish a common law marriage here for that woman? Can we establish that under the laws of the state of New York and give her the rights of Social Security and such? But it recognized certain things that God put in marriage. God put in there. Now, what's some of those things that happened? Well, one of them, that Chris doesn't own his own body anymore. It's not his. It belongs to Jody. It's hers. Okay? And Jody doesn't own her body anymore. It belongs to Chris. It's a mutual thing. But there's a difference. Chris in his heart doesn't call Jody Lord. Jody in her heart calls Chris Lord. If you have a Bible marriage. If you don't, you just have what the rest of the world has. You have this new synthesized thing we call marriage. Okay? And that's why, you know, well, let's give it to just anybody who comes along. Well, what about two homosexuals that have been gratifying each other for a while? They want to have these same rights, you know, that the legislatures came up with. And you know what? It came from Caesar. Give it back to Caesar. Okay? That's not something God made. God didn't make this thing with man and woman in the sense, here are these legislative rights we're giving to man and woman. Caesar made those. Caesar did it. And if it's Caesar's, give it to Caesar. That's why this church no longer practices civil marriage. If you want to get married, when Kyle and Tiffany got married, someone else signed their marriage certificate. Okay? I don't do civil marriage. This church has stripped that right away from me. We will not do civil marriage in this church. And yet, if you get married in this church, we require you to go have civil marriage. But we see it as Caesar's, not ours. You go get that thing. You go put that thing together by the laws of the state of New York, but no longer will this church partake in that. But you go have a ceremony. You want to know something? I think we have to be able to this church need a ceremony. Because all you have is a civil union between the two of you. Okay? There's never been a time when that woman has said in her heart, this is my Lord.
Yes.
Never been a time when this man has said, I would die for this woman. I would be like Jesus Christ and I would give my life for her. You know what Jesus Christ, he didn't just give his life. He was willing to be stripped naked. He was willing to have a crown of thorns on him. He was willing to have everybody mock him and laugh at him. He was willing to have spit run down his face. And if a man doesn't have that attitude for his wife, he doesn't have a marriage. He's got that civil thing that Caesar thought of. One of the saddest things I've ever watched over the years, and I've watched it over the years. You know, you watch some of these television shows or whatever, and one of the funny ones, for example, is Haley Mills and That Darn Cat. I don't know how many people have ever seen Haley Mills and That Darn Cat. If you haven't had a chance, go rent it. It's like a buck there at Family Video. You know, it's a 1960s movie or whatever, and but one of the things that goes on is there's a neighbor woman who peeks out the windows, spies on everything. And her husband has a hearing aid, and the only way he can put up with her is jerk that hearing aid out. You know, and it's big funny. Ha, 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 he jerks his hearing aid out. You know how many men I know who live that kind of a life? They have learned to shut her out. They have learned to shut off her emotions, shut off her heart, shut off her mouth. They just pull that hearing aid out. And that woman has never called him Lord in her heart. And they just exist together, sharing a house, sharing certain legal things, physically addicted for periods of time to each other. You know what happens after a while? Men grow guts. Can you imagine me 70 pounds lighter than I am now? What I was when my wife married me. My wife was considerably not just lighter, but tauter. Okay? You know what happens when you approach 60? Your skin sags. You know what happens when you run a number of children through a woman's body? You don't look the same. Okay? You know one of the cruelest things a man can do? Is go on the television, look at these airbrushed models. Make his wife compete with that. Think that woman's ever given 8 children to her husband? Think she's ever done a thing like that? Everything on her body working exact like it's supposed to be? And some man watching that thing, standing there, and then here's some woman that's got to compete with that? God forbid. My wife competes with her heart. My wife competes by calling me in her heart, her Lord. We have something to treasure, something wonderful. You know, one of the saddest things on earth is when two people get together and they put on airs and they never really qualified for whether they should have been together or not been together. As they grow older and more relaxed, each has an idea what they want a home to be like. And they're going this way. They're going this way. Let me tell you something. The most comfortable place you ever knew was your parents' kitchen table. You can sit around there and talk, and your sisters and your brothers and such, and talk. And I know I got a few people here who've been in some pretty fractured homes and maybe didn't work like it was supposed to. And maybe you're having to struggle to build a home for the first time and you've never really known what it was supposed to be. God bless you in that. That's why you have a Bible, and I hope you can learn from some of the people in this church. But for some of you that really have a kitchen table where you can sit around and people can talk and laugh and you can be yourself. You want to know something? As you get older, that's what you want your home to be. Yeah. Can you imagine being married to someone who abhors that? Doesn't like it? And what they see is that ultimate place to relax and what they want things to be, you abhor? That's why you have courtship. You find out what each one's families are like, what their lives are like, and you find out what that is. And before you ever, come on, Miss Chris, get a seat. Before you ever come together, you have that established that, you know what, as we grow old, we want to do it together. As this goofball gets a pot belly and teeth start falling out and hair starts falling out and all that kind of stuff, this is the direction we want to be going. I tell the story sometimes of Darren Truel. Darren's probably the single most successful missionary I know of. He went to the Dominican Republic because Bill Randall sent him there. Say, how much support did he have? Zero. You know what he did? He just went and lived like a Dominican. Dominicans fed him. How many churches did he start? Most missionaries struggle to start one. Darren started 5. 3 of them speak Creole because he's right on the Haitian border and he works with the migrants that come over from Haiti. 2 of them speak Spanish. He's got a medical clinic. He's got support now. Last I know, he's up to almost $1,000 a month in support. His church is finding and such. Darren Truel, we call him Mr. Magoo because I don't know if I've ever met anybody blinder and more goofy and out in left field than Darren Truel is. And he fell in love with a woman raised to be a model. Her brother was raised to be a professional baseball player. He's a pastor today. He had a 90-mile-an-hour fastball when he was 15 years old. The Atlanta Braves used to attend his high school games. And Steve Williamson was on the mission field, the Turks and Caicos Islands, and they cut off his support. The natives didn't like him anymore, and they were sitting there, him and his wife, trying to fish for food. The Atlanta Braves used to call his father every 30 days and say $300,000 for him to just come and try out. For him just to come and sign and try out and fail, $300,000 guaranteed. Steve never took it. He's a pastor today with great power on his life. Okay? His sister was raised to be a model. Absolutely stunningly beautiful girl. Darren talks about after they got married, the first thing he said, well, I need a few things at the store. They walk into the store, about as you know, there's like 3 carts full of all the stuff she needed. And he's like, what? I mean, most naive guy I've ever met in my life. But the thing is, here's Darren, who's just a nerd's nerd. And here's this girl who at one point is in the Charter Rivers Hospital for substance abuse because her life is falling apart and everything's awful and she's only 18 years old and she's now fit for the cover of any magazine anywhere, but she's finally got substance abuses and that, and her family starts going sitting under Bill Randall's ministry, and her brother ends up getting saved and born again, and her parents end up living a new life, and she starts coming to the house of God, and
and such. And she ends up marrying all the people in the world, Mr. Magoo, Darren Trull. And people think, why did this girl marry this guy? But she tells the story one time in her first pregnancy. And they're standing in a party together, and all sorts of people are out. And you ladies with a pregnancy, you know this. You don't always have the greatest control. You know what she did? She let wind, and it was loud. And it stunk. And she was humiliated. You know what her husband did? He jumped up and said, oh, excuse me! And ran out of the room. And every single person believed he did it and mocked him.
Good man.
You know what? She loved him. She loved him. She's had 10 children. She suffers from a tropical disease in her brain today. Still as loyal to him as anybody you'll ever see. When you see that face, you still see him. I mean, she looks like a woman with 10 children running around her. But you see that face, it's still got that beauty. And they still have that just innocent love. You know why? Because he absolutely would take mocking, stoning, he would take anything for her. And he'd do anything for her. And she found a man that actually was that to her. And that's why for her to sit in these little villages in the Dominican Republic and have her children run around and fishing to get their food and have a little plot of food there and have to raise a couple of goats and some chickens and such and to live that way. You know what? She's found it a wonderful and acceptable life.
Amen.
That's
good.
Lightly. A man ought to be willing to protect his wife, her reputation, hold on to her and see to it. No man speak evil of my wife in front of me. Better not speak evil of my wife in front of my children. Better not speak evil of it. I'll do whatever I can to protect her. And if it turns out she really has screwed up and she really has done that, I'll take the blame because anybody being married to me, how could they ever do things right? I'll take it that way. I would to God that I could have been a better man and she hadn't had to fall for these things. Some of you remember Billie Jean King, the tennis player. Alright? Huge tennis player in the 60s and 70s. One of the most precious things I've ever known in marriage came out of a scandal with her. Somewhere in the early 80s, a woman sued her for palimony. They've been having a lesbian affair out on the road. She wept. She hadn't wanted to be that way. Said it was a weakness. I fell for it. You know what her husband did? He came out on national TV and said, you're looking at the blame here. I bear all the blame for what happened to my wife. And I'll never forget my respect for that man. You're looking at the man who just marketed her out there, put her out there, and made her do all this practice and such, and never gave her what she really wanted as a wife, never gave her the love, never gave her the affection, anything else. And I'll never forget my admiration for that man and thinking to myself, you know, he may have failed, but boy, by golly, he stood there and took all the blame for this woman being sued by this other woman. Took it all upon himself. We have too many men today that have retreated. You know how many older men I know that have a wood shop down in the basement and have all these little hobbies they do and they stick with them? Because their wife's a shrew and runs around the house and runs everything, and they surrendered a long time ago. I know a lot of men like that. They just run around and just take care of their little hobbies because they just surrendered a long time ago. Eventually, that woman just broke their will. You know who I blame? The man.
Yes, sir.
100% of the time. 100% of the time. A man's what he's supposed to be, a woman will want to call him Lord in her heart. She'll desire to do it. Otherwise, all they're going to have is this artificial thing the government cobbles together, calls marriage today, the two sodomites can do. And that's all you have. You want to boast you're heterosexual, but all you have is this thing cobbled together and given to you by Caesar, and it doesn't mean anything to you, you might as well hire a divorce. Right off, start saving up for it. Or psychological counselors, people to help you out with it. If that's all you're ever going to have, do your children a favor. Get yourselves fixed. Don't have them.
But if all you've ever had is that legal thing that they put out there,
you said to yourself, I want something more. Might be good to have a ceremony. Might be good on a Wednesday night to have Pastor Haynes step down and marry a couple of people right here in front of this church here. A couple of people said, you know what, we want something a little bit more than just that legal thing. Something a little bit more. Kyle Tiffany did that. They got the legal thing. They came to me and said, we want you to come then afterwards. We want you to put God's blessing on it.
Pastor Haynes, would you close the service? Mm-hmm.